So again, we are in Acts chapter 18, and Paul and Silas pick up Timothy in Lystra. They end up in Troas, where they see a vision. They go across into Asia, Europe rather, and it is in Philippi then that they have their first converts in Europe, being first off Lydia and then the jailer. They then find themselves in Thessalonica, Berea, who are more noble-minded. Eventually they are, Paul is basically run out of town, and the brethren take him to Athens. When Paul gets to Athens, he calls for them to come back. And those two blue lines are them going back up to Thessalonica, because Paul was so concerned about the brethren there that he wanted to find out how they're doing and to give them encouragement. We also believe that shortly after that, Paul sent Silas probably to Philippi, because while they were gone, Paul then goes to Corinth. And while he's at Corinth, they both come back. And while Paul is at Corinth, he's working and preaching. So he's supporting himself through a secular means. And what were those secular means? He was a tent maker. His daddy taught him to be a tent maker because his granddaddy was a tent maker, etc., etc. And who was he working with? Aquila and Priscilla. And by the way, if I ever say Ananias and Sapphira, I'm surprised I haven't already. Please correct me. I get those two couples mixed up, and they couldn't be further from being different. So if I do that, please correct me. But Aquila and Priscilla are working with Paul, both secularly as well as in the gospel. While Paul is at Corinth, this is kind of where we ended up last week, while Paul is at Corinth, things are going well, right? But there comes a time in which the Jews, of course, have had enough. They bring him before Gallio, who we talked about was one of our time markers, right, of how we can date the book of Acts. We know through secular history when he ruled. Therefore, we know when these events happened within about a year or so, and then we can take those events, move them forward, move them back to help us date the book of Acts. And interestingly enough, for the longest time, Luke mentions this guy named Gallio, and there's no secular record of this guy. And so they were criticizing Luke, see, the Bible's fake, it's all made up, whatever. Well, eventually, God is proven correct. Luke is proven correct. The Holy Spirit's proven correct, because eventually they find a tablet, basically a signpost or a plaque on a building, I don't remember where, but they find this guy's name. So again, the Bible's proven correct. So this guy did in fact exist, but Paul is brought before this man because they're claiming that he's preaching things and telling people to do things that are against the law. Gallio sees through all this, and he says, you know what, if this was something that was really worth my attention, if it had to do with Roman law, I would deal with it. But this has something to do with your own Jewish religion. Leave me alone. Get out of here. And he literally has the police drive them away. And so because of that, Gallio didn't realize this, but that really gives, in some ways, a Roman stamp of approval on Christianity. And so therefore, they have a period of about 10 years where there's much less persecution. Paul was able to go from city to city and not fear this. So this was a pretty big deal. That then takes us to about verse 18. Paul, having reigned many days longer, took leave of the brethren and put out to sea for Syria. And with him were Priscilla and Aquila. In Centuria, he had his hair cut, for he was keeping a vow. Verse 19, they came to Ephesus, and he left them there. Now he himself entered the synagogue and reasoned with the Jews. When they asked him to stay for a longer time, he did not consent, but taking leave of them and saying, I will return to you again if God wills, he set sail from Ephesus. So there's my little animation, which I'm so proud of and I absolutely love. If you miss it, there it is again. All right. Love that back button. So he then takes Priscilla and Aquila with him. We don't know why they decided to go. Luke just says they joined him. So they end up in Ephesus. And we mentioned this before, but we believe that Ephesus was where he was headed when he started this journey. If you remember, he leaves Antioch, he goes into the Phrygian and Galatian region, and it says that the Spirit prohibits him from going into Asia. Well, that's where Ephesus is, it's in Asia. And then it says that he was prevented from going into Bithynia, which is that northeast area, and so he ends up going west. And so now he finally gets to go back. Apparently now the Spirit says, well, it's okay, now is when I want you to go there. So he ends up in Ephesus, and this is a pretty big deal. He's going to spend a lot of time in Ephesus. And we'll get to that when we talk about chapter 19 next. Based on the text, it doesn't look like he stays very long, though, right? It's just kind of a, let's feel the water. Let's see, you know, let's see how warm it is here, right? He sticks his toes in the water to see if it's comfortable. What kind of reception is he going to get here, right? Now, we don't know, and we're kind of reading between the lines. We don't really know. But based on the text, it doesn't look like he's there very long. He appears to be in a hurry to get to Jerusalem. Some translations of what's called the Western text adds words that says that he's in a hurry to get back for the feast. And so, based on that interpretation, he's only in Ephesus a day, 2 days, 3 days, and then he's heading off because he wants to get to Jerusalem for the feast. It's possible also that it has something to do with this vow that he took and the hair and all that kind of stuff. We talked about that a little bit last week, but it appears that he's only there for a very short time. However, something unusual happens, something that's only really happened once before, and that is the Jews ask him to stay longer. What? Yeah, the Jews actually ask him to stay longer. And there's no, Luke doesn't mention any converts, right? But the time that he is there, it's positive. He has a good feeling that he's going to be received well if and when he gets to come back. Plus, what also is good to note here, Paul's going to leave, but what's that?
He said he's coming back.
He, if the Lord wills, he'll come back, but there's something else. He's going to be gone, but who's staying? Priscilla and Aquila stand. His co-workers in the gospel. Okay, so even though Paul's going to leave, he has trusted companions, trusted teachers who are going to stay and continue on his work while he's gone. He says, if the Lord wills, he will then come back. Verse 21, by taking leave of them and saying, I will return to you again if God wills, he set sail from Ephesus. And if you're taking notes, Romans 16:3 is where Paul calls Priscilla and Aquila his fellow workers in Christ Jesus. So he knows that the work there is going to continue. The other possibility about why he only stayed a short time was the ship that he was on, while it was headed to Palestine, it had a scheduled stop in Ephesus. It would unload cargo, unload people, load new cargo, load new people, and then head out. And so that would only take a day, that sort of thing. And so he didn't want to wait around for another one. And so he possibly, it was just the schedule that the ship was on. So anyway, just something to consider. And then Luke records verse 22, actually verse 22 and 23, to me it's kind of interesting, because in Luke's mind, I'm just going to throw this in there and just keep on moving. Just keep on trucking along, right? Verse 22, when he had landed at Caesarea, he went up and greeted the church and went down to Antioch. What does that verse end? It ends the second journey, right? So it's Paul's second missionary journey, Paul's second preaching journey ends at verse 22. And Luke just kind of says, it's over. And then he turns right around and says, oh, yeah, now he's leaving for another one, verse 23. And in my mind, you know, if I was the guy back in the, I don't know, 12th century, whenever it was, when they broke out the scriptures into books, chapters, and verses, not books, but chapters and verses, to me that would have been a good place to put a chapter break. All right? It's a pretty big deal, but that's just my two cents, right? But notice also, he says he wants to go to Syria. I mean, where did he say that? He said that, was it 18? Yeah. Paul, having remained many days longer, took leave of the brethren and put out to sea for Syria. Syria is where Antioch is. That's where he started the first two journeys. So he wants to go to Syria, and of course he makes a stop in Ephesus for whatever reason, either planned or unplanned, or that's just the schedule of the ship. But does he go to Syria directly? Okay, get ready. Everybody look at the screen. Ready? One, two, three. That is the exact route that he took. No, I'm just kidding. He ends up then, instead of going to direct to Syria like he did on the first journey, remember, he went from, I'm drawing a blank now, but anyway, he went from in Southeast Asia, he went directly from there all the way directly to Syria. In this case, he goes down towards Jerusalem, lands at Caesarea, which is a major seaport, right? And we talked about Caesarea quite a bit. Caesarea is a pretty big deal. Who is Caesarea the home of? Going back to our previous classes. Who lives in Caesarea? I heard something? Well, first off, Pilate, right? It's where Pilate lives. The one who condemned Jesus. Who else? Philip the Evangelist, one of the seven in verse 6. And we're going to see him again, I believe, in chapter 21, still in Caesarea. Who else lives here? You all know who it is. Cornelius. Cornelius lives here. All right? Again, he notes, Luke notes, went up and greeted the church. So when he lands at Caesarea, what church does he go up to? I think most people think Jerusalem. Some will say it's Caesarea. But I believe it is in fact Jerusalem. And there could be cases for both. But I believe for multiple reasons, it's probably Jerusalem, right? That's where the apostles were. That's where the church leaders were. He would want to go there, give them an update on what he was able to accomplish, how God had opened a door of faith to the Gentiles, right, like he had done before. Plus, it says that they went up. And we know that Jerusalem is basically the highest point there. And then it says that he went down to Antioch. So as I said, verse 22 is going to be the end of the journey. This journey's taken about 3 years. So if you're taking notes, you like timelines and things of that nature, this trip took about 3 years. So, and again, if you're answering the questions that we'll cover hopefully here in a little bit, this will be one of your questions in 22 and then in verse 23. As well as the charts that we will get into next week. Verse 23, when he had landed at Caesarea, he went up and greeted the church and went down to Antioch. Verse, that was 22. Verse 23, and having spent some time there, he left and passed successfully through the Galatian region and Phrygia, strengthening all the disciples. So again, Luke just kind of nonchalantly just says, oh, he's ended that one, he's starting another one. We don't know, obviously, since we just read, we don't know how long Paul stayed in Antioch. But for however long it was, he eventually decides, okay, I'm going to head back out. I'm going to go back, and I'm going to strengthen those churches. And I think, so he heads back up to Antioch. All right. So then when he leaves Antioch, then he's going to go back through, and he's going to revisit those churches that him and who established. Paul and Barnabas established these churches on the first missionary journey. Okay? And if we think about Paul, and we think about where he's at right now, what he's been able to accomplish, we don't know. But more than likely, Paul is saying goodbye to the church at Antioch, telling them, I'm going to be gone. I don't know how long. Could be 3 or 4 or 5 years, but I'll be back to let you know how everything happened. I will again return to let you know that, of course, how God continues to open the door of faith to the Gentiles. What Paul doesn't know is that this is the last time that he will see their faces. He will not return to Antioch because he will eventually be arrested, charged, and he will appeal to Caesar and end up in Rome. And that's where the book, in fact, ends in chapter 28. What's also interesting to me is that when Paul leaves, there's no mention of any traveling companions. Luke just says, Paul leaves, right? Doesn't mention anybody going with him. I think it's probably safe to say that he always had traveling companions with him. We don't know that for sure, but it just seems like as you read through his letters to the churches, there was always somebody with him. And he probably had some with him here. We do know in reading the other letters to the churches that he does in fact have them on this journey. Luke just doesn't record that he left with any. In chapter 19, in the next chapter, Timothy and Erastus are with him. They just all of a sudden just pop up as traveling companions. And Titus, if we read 2 Corinthians, we find out that Paul and Titus spent some time traveling together. And as we just read, Luke does not mention any events that happened during that particular time when he's going through and strengthening those churches. It almost seems like Luke's intent is, I'm going to let you know that, he went through these, and visited and strengthened these churches, but he's more focused on what's going to happen at Ephesus. Because he will spend more time at Ephesus than any other place. So Ephesus is a pretty big deal. And one thing that Paul does in this journey that Luke does not mention, one of his secondary goals besides strengthening the churches early on, is collecting a monetary contribution for the poor saints in Jerusalem. And I can't help but wonder, when he landed at Caesarea, if this strengthens why he went to, strengthens the fact that he went to Jerusalem, is that he now, as he goes to Jerusalem and sees the poor saints there, he sees that there's a need for their support. And so then when he gets back to Antioch, he's thinking about the poor saints in Jerusalem and decides that when I go on this next trip, I'm going to make that a priority, right? And we can look at and while Luke doesn't really record it, there's only one mention where Paul talks about it. As we read his letters to the churches, to the church at Rome and the church at Corinth, he does in fact mention this idea, right? Romans 15, 22 through 28, and 1 Corinthians 16, 1 through 3, which most of us know pretty well, right? So that's, as he's going through here, he's collecting funds for the saints in Jerusalem. So then in verse 24 then, so while Paul is in the Galatian and Phrygian region strengthening the churches, the rest of this chapter does not focus on Paul, but what happens at Ephesus between the time that he left and the time that he gets back. All right? Verse 24. Now, a Jew named Apollos, an Alexandrian by birth, an eloquent man, came to Ephesus, and he was mighty in the scriptures. This man had been instructed in the way of the Lord, and being fervent in spirit, he was speaking and teaching accurately the things concerning Jesus, being acquainted only with the baptism of John, and began to speak out boldly in the synagogue. But when Priscilla and Aquila heard him, they took him aside and explained to him the way of God more accurately. So Apollos comes to Ephesus. We don't know, unless he came from Alexandria, we don't know exactly, you know, where he was previous to that. But Apollos comes to Ephesus while Paul is strengthening the churches in the Galatian region. And he was working hard. Actually, let me back up. It says that he was born and raised in Alexandria. Okay, we've talked about Alexandria at least once before. Anybody remember where Alexandria is? What country it's in? It's in Egypt. That's right. It's in Egypt. And it was at least one, if not the, educational centers of the world at that time. Had a huge, huge library, right? And of biblical importance, what happened at Alexandria? Another book was written in Alexandria. What book was that? The Septuagint. And what is the Septuagint? It's the Greek version of the Old Testament. All right. When Alexander the Great came in, he pushed the Greek culture, so everybody was speaking Greek. Well, the Old Testament wasn't written in Greek. It was mostly written in Hebrew, with a little bit of Aramaic in it. People had trouble reading it. So 70 men came together and wrote the Septuagint, which is a Greek version of the Old Testament. And because Apollos came from this very learned, very educated, educational center of the world, probably played into the fact of who Apollos was. He was well-educated. He was apparently well-educated and was taught how to speak in a way that was persuasive. Because not only was it, you know, did it just have the information, but there was also schools there that taught you how to teach and to persuade. So as we learn about Apollos, Apollos was working hard, speaking and teaching about Jesus. And note that what he was doing, while not quite complete information, it does say that what he was preaching was accurate. So while Apollos was hard speaking and teaching about Jesus, there was a problem. While he knew the Old Testament scriptures and knew that what the Old Testament scriptures said about the Messiah, he didn't have a complete understanding about the gospel message. So when Priscilla and Aquila heard him, what did they do? Verse 26, yep. They pulled him aside. Now, I find this interesting because Luke could have just said Priscilla and Aquila taught him the way more accurately. But Luke is known for detail. Luke lets them know how they went about doing that. And depending upon your version, and it might just be the NIV, but does anybody have use the NIV today? Well, the NIV has in there that they took Apollos to their home and taught him the way more accurately. Because that is the way in which it could be interpreted. Most other versions have took him aside or some version like that. But it is possible that they literally, in taking him aside, took him home. Okay? So instead of berating him for teaching error, publicly humiliating him or embarrassing him, they did it in private. And if we were to look at, chapter 18, verse 2. When we first are introduced to Aquila and Priscilla, how were their names arranged? So Aquila and Priscilla. Aquila's the man, Priscilla's the woman. I believe every other instance when we hear of this couple, she's mentioned first. What's that? It flows easier. Carla says, yes, of course it flows easier. Carla's feeling ornery today. Flows easier. And to me, that's not coincidental, right? Maybe if it was Aquila and Priscilla, and then Priscilla and Aquila, and then back to Aquila and Priscilla again. But even they're referenced in two other places in the New Testament, and even in those places, it's Priscilla and Aquila. So there, Luke, I think Luke's trying to tell us something, right? So yeah, so one of the explanations to that, which Andre said, is that many believe that she was a very prominent, well-known woman, right? Worldwide well-known probably, but in at least in these circles, she was well-known, so she was, that's why she would be listed first. That is correct. At least in the early church, right? So when Luke is writing to Theophilus, Theophilus probably, has heard and understands or something, right? This particular woman was well known. And at least to me, and this I'm sure will generate some discussion, it would appear that Priscilla played an active role in the teaching of Apollos. Now, we don't know exactly how active, we don't know exactly what she said or anything of that nature. But because her name was mentioned in that conversation of teaching Apollos more accurately, and because of Priscilla's name being first, I think even strengthens that idea even more, that they didn't just take him home and Priscilla make the roast and the mashed potatoes and gravy while Aquila was doing the teaching. And she would yell through the opening in the kitchen as she's taking the biscuits out of the oven, right? No, she was taking an active role. Apparently, I'm feeling kind of ornery today too, huh? Anyway, so it would appear because her name is first and Aquila's the second that she played this role in teaching, and so. To me, at least, I think it does show that women do play a role, not only in teaching, but it is possible for women to be able to teach men. However, that needs to be, again, it needs to be, we need to be considering 1 Timothy 2, 11 through 12 and other verses about the role of women, and especially in relationship to men, but clearly, especially in public assembly, but clearly to me, this allows in some way women to teach men in a private setting. That being said, I would just urge caution. Okay? But I think this clearly does show that women have a role and can in some way in the privacy of the home especially play a part in teaching men.
I think about the woman sitting next to
Yeah. And again, there is no criticism of this recorded. Nothing's hinted in any way that anything that Priscilla did was wrong, right? So I would just add that this is something to consider. And again, when that does happen, my personal suggestion, and that's all it is that you just kind of be cautious about it, all right? Because clearly there are women who know a lot, right? So, anybody else? Any other comments or questions? Okay. Verse 27. So, Priscilla and Aquila teach Apollos the way. And again, he was teaching it accurately. He just needed a little redirection, needed a little bit more information, needed to be able to make that final connection of Jesus of Nazareth. Not only is the Christ, but the Messiah has come. Jesus has come in that final form. He's at the right hand of God now, right? So he just needed those final pieces. Well, knowing Apollos, he was on fire before. Now, having the full revelation, he's really on fire. He wants to do something with this. And for whatever reason, maybe because Priscilla and Aquila had just come from Corinth, right? They just got from Corinth a few weeks or months prior. More than likely told Apollos about the saints that are in Corinth and the good work that they had going on there. Maybe that's why he decided he wanted to go. All right. The text says Achaia, but that's basically the region where Corinth is, right? And we see later on Apollos is at Corinth. So for whatever reason, maybe those reasons, maybe not, after being taught the way more accurately than He wanted to go to Corinth. Verse 27, and when he wanted to go across to Achaia, the brethren encouraged him and wrote to the disciples to welcome him. And when he had arrived, he greatly helped those who had believed through grace, for he powerfully refuted the Jews in public, demonstrating by the scriptures that Jesus was the Christ. And so Apollos then takes this newly acquired knowledge that he gets from Priscilla and Aquila. He goes to Corinth, helps the brethren there. So just as Priscilla and Aquila helps Apollos, Apollos helps the saints at Corinth, and in today's word, we would say that Apollos pays it forward. All right? So all of this is what's happening prior to Paul getting there. Now, as we will see next week, Apollos will leave before Paul gets there. But between Priscilla and Aquila and the work that Apollos does prior to leaving, really sets the stage and warms things up, if you will, for the work that Paul is going to do. All right? Any questions? All right, well, I've got some questions for you. We're not going to get through too many of them, but we can get through some of them. All right, how would you outline the chapter? Anybody want to share what they got?
I'd say 1-4, Paul and Corinth working and teaching. Mm-hmm. Chapter 11, Paul, Silas, and Timothy fully devoted to teaching in Corinth. 12-17, the uprising against Paul. 18-22, traveling and the end of the second journey. 23, the beginning of the third journey. 24-28, the following.
Very similar to mine, broken up slightly different, but very good. And I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and I think you could easily trim that down to 5, but this is just kind of what made sense to me. Paul preaching and working in Corinth, 1-4. Again, Paul preaching and working, right? And then 5-17, Paul devoted to preaching only for a year and a half, for 18 months. Verses 18-21, Paul, Priscilla, and Aquila in Ephesus. 22, second journey ends with Paul in Antioch. 23, third journey starts. Apollos is helped by Priscilla and Aquila, 24-26. And then 27-28, Apollos helps the church at Corinth. That's what I got. All right, number two, what would you use for chapter headings for the chapter? So what, you know, what things, what big things happened in this chapter to help you remember that when you're studying with somebody or doing your own studies, you want to know, hey, where did that happen? What do you want to remember? We've been using two most of the time. On occasion, there's been three. I have three on this one. All right, Celeste has four, and she normally has two or three. So what was your four?
Paul and Corinth. Second journey in, third journey begins. So let's keep that all in one line. And Apollos.
Okay, so Paul at Corinth, second journey ends, first journey, or third journey begins, and Apollos at Corinth. Yeah. And mine are Paul and Corinth, end of second journey, start of third. Right. I just went ahead and, because those are the big things, at least in my mind, I didn't bother with Apollos. All right, number three. How was Paul's departure from Athens different than the ones in Macedonia? Okay. Okay. So mixed, reception in Athens, but not so in Corinth. So what, anybody got anything else? I went a slightly different route. They were more forgiving. Okay. That's what I was looking for. Every other place, he was run out of town, right? Either they tried to kill him, or word got to him that they were trying to kill him, and so he had to flee. Here, when he got done with Athens and went to Corinth, it just says, oh, he got up and left. Right? So the last one, what kind of city was Corinth? I'll just list off what I've got. It was 40 miles west of Athens, population of around 125,000. It was one of the commercial centers of the world, just like we will find out about Ephesus next week. It was the Roman capital of Achaia. And as we said last week, it had a reputation for sexual immorality. It was a city in pursuit of pleasure. And you might remember me saying that it was said that Corinth was where you went to have a good time. Think Las Vegas. And finally, and that the people, and this wasn't so much about Corinth, but and the people that make up the church in Corinth came from those people. So you might wonder how Corinth, it's no wonder now why Corinth had the problems that they did, knowing the city in which they lived. All right, next week we'll pick up with question number five. Thank you.